Sad song.
I mean,
very musical in the studio.
I had to put out all the stops this evening. You know, I mean, it might be big news, but Power Ballad Friday has to be big. And you can't get better than Every Rose Has Its Thorn. So what happened was this. The Poison lead singer, Bret Michaels, called his girlfriend at her LA apartment and heard a man's voice in the background. The next day, the disconsolate Michaels took his acoustic guitar with him to a laundromat and wrote the song right there while waiting for his socks and undies to dry. Isn't it amazing?
It is. I'm not so interested in the socks and undies, but thanks for sharing.
I mean, that's just creative right there. He can pull something out while he's waiting for his underwear to dry. What a great song, isn't it, Michael?
It is a great song. I can't say that I've been all that inspired in any laundromat that I've been into so far to be that creative. there's a laundromat near us that's right beside a pub, and that seems to be a very good idea. Leave the laundromat, go to the pub.
Someone says, OMG, I bet that song didn't blow anyone's mind on first listen.
That's very mean.
Speaking of which, amazing response regarding what's that one album that blew your mind on first listen? Because many albums are slow burners, right? Here's one. 1984 Eurythmics. These songs will stay in your head forever. It was wonderful. Diane in Chicago says, Aqualung by Jethro Tull. Mm. The 70s were awesome. Another one says, Smells Like Teen Spirit. When I was 12 and just got home from school and the video was on, I knew music had changed forever. So what was that one album that blew your mind on very first listen?
Wallace, am I allowed to ask you?
Yes.
What one blew your mind?
Wait for it. 2 minutes' time. Someone says, I've waited 7 years for this, Wallace. Thank you for the best Power Ballad Friday ever. Uh-huh. Good on you. All right, time for I've Been Thinking. Sally Wendy, take it away.
I've been thinking about duck shooting. Now, the first weekend in May, the season starts, and there is up to, I'd say, 100,000 people around the country who have a go at this annual pilgrimage. Now, I'm a keen duck hunter myself, and I use a wheelchair, and my friends and family, they lift me in and out of little dinghies and get me out to my mys, or I'll be wearing my camo outfit on the side of a dam or a waterway, and I'm freezing away, but it's all part of the culture, and it's just fun. However, Fish and Game, the eastern region, they have made an accessible mai mai. It's on a waterway near Te Puke, and there's a boardwalk that goes out to it, and it's corrugated iron.
Fantastic.
And it's wood, and there's a lower area for somebody who uses a wheelchair. And it's been made thanks to donations from local businesses, and local tradies have built it for free. So thank you, everybody, for doing that. I have no expectations, and I imagine a lot of other disabled people don't either, for my mice to be accessible. We just work around it. But that is so neat. So Fish and Game is apparently looking at making many more accessible hunting spots and fishing spots when they can. But this is a really cool start. So hats off.
Well done. Good news Friday.
Fantastic.
Isn't that great?
Yeah. Fantastic.
And it works? It works for you?
Well, I'll find out in May. But they've sent me photos. It looks like a resort compared to most other mai-mais, I'll tell you that much.
That's good.
Very good. Thank you, Sarah. Kia ora.
For a portion of the cull that you get? Are they thinking they're going to get ducks in return?
Well, if I promised them ducks, they'd be very lucky, because I actually am not a good shot. So I think I'm more of a duck watcher.
All right.
Sure, okay. It's all about get the binoculars out. Okay, Michael Moynihan.
Mine's also about being in the countryside, actually, funnily enough, because that's what you're talking about. It's about having access to being in the landscape and being able to do the thing that you want to do, and to be able to do that unimpeded. And that's, I think, fantastic. A little while ago, did a paddle up the Whanganui River, which was stunning. It was completely fantastic. Really enjoyed it. We had a guide, and the guide pointed out some things as we went along, talked about the Bridge to Nowhere, and quite a lot about the geography topography and the geology and the, all of that sort of stuff. But I was struck yet again about my desire to hear the history stories, to hear the stories that of that plateau or that outcrop or whatever. And I went in search of some sort of app or something that might give me, you know, location-based stories. And I found something called New Zealand Historical, I think, which is a really nice app where you go and you it pinpoints something, you tap the button, you can see some photographs and paintings and stuff like that. But I still want to be able to go into the landscape and look at that scene and think, what's the story that sits around that? What happened on that? Because we have so little that's built in stone, you know, the remnants of it is not there, but there will be so many people that have walked across that piece of land that have, you know, lived and loved and fought and all of that sort of stuff. And I really, there could well be something out there, and maybe a listener will tell us, but I would love to know that there's some sort of portable device so that when I was going through the countryside, I could look at something and say, what happened here?
Probably an opportunity for a developer as well.
I thought that the Ministry for Culture and Heritage was working on something like it, but I couldn't find it.
Okay. Hey, now, before we go, you talked about going up the Whanganu River for 3 days. Mm. How was the paddle, briefly?
So the paddle was largely from so I had spent all of the last 6 months or 3 or 4 months swimming every day to try and build up my muscles in my arm and make sure that I felt the paddle wasn't too bad. Unfortunately, and that was fine. So from a fitness point of view, from a, you know, doing for 3 days, that was completely fine. But I did manage to not... I'm quite tall, and what I was told at the beginning was that your centre of gravity, the lower your centre of gravity, the less likely you are to fall in. And I was
proof of that. I fell in
a number of times.
Oh, you're kidding me.
The landscape, however, was completely – it is just so –
That would ruin it for me, Michael. Falling in out of a kayak, that's shocking.
Really? Yeah. Well, we're going down rapids and things.
Oh, okay, yeah. Rapids, right.
All right. 19 away from 7, the panel. Now, Tauranga's government-appointed commissioners have recommended they stay on with no mayor elected in July, though the minister has rejected the bid. As the background to this, Tauranga's 4 commissioners, chaired by former National MP Anne Tolley, have been running the city since 2021, when they were appointed to replace a dysfunctional administration led by then-Mayor Tembi Powell. Minister Swinnie Brown, in a statement, said, "I want to confirm to the people of Tauranga and the commission that there will be no hybrid model of governance following the July election. Tauranga will return to being a full democracy." And on that, we have former mayor of Tauranga, Greg Brownless. Greg, good to have you here.
Yes, good evening.
This has been quite the saga, hasn't it? What have you made of it, watching on, about the fair city that you once reigned over?
Well, it was pretty embarrassing. I wouldn't say that I exactly reigned over. I was part of the governance of it.
I know.
Yes, it was a bit embarrassing to come from Tauranga for a while, and I guess that many people, in a way, felt that something had to happen, and that did. Commissioners were appointed. But they then did go in 2022 and have their term extended. Some people may have felt the shine was starting to fall off after that. And then to discover on the 19th of December that they had actually sent a letter to the minister asking for what they call a hybrid form of council, going on as far ahead as perhaps even 2028. I feel that was a bit much, and that it was going behind the backs of the people, because there was no publicity about this until the minister's letter was revealed.
Yep. Okay, Greg, Sally's here.
Hi, Greg. Gosh,
hi.
I just find it absolutely bizarre that they'd want to continue being what they call a hybrid. But it's, I mean, do they think they're the Vatican or something? For goodness sake. You know, they're a region of New Zealand, and we are a democracy, and we're all meant to be run, you know, by local body elections. I'm a bit flummoxed.
I'm glad to hear that, Sally, because there is a view around, and the commissioners say it, that sometimes democracy fails or you don't necessarily get the right people. But I think that's a poor argument to suspend democracy.
Michael?
I'm just trying to imagine Anne Tolley as in a kind of papal robes or something that kind of makes it. I find this extraordinary too, and I certainly I don't understand why Tauranga should be so extraordinarily different than anywhere else.
Right.
Maybe everywhere needs some sort of Vatican intervention. But, but in reality, my guess is that Tauranga can't be any more or less dysfunctional than anywhere else.
Okay then, Greg. So what I put it to you, that the good, fair-minded people of Tauranga, what they want are sensible, fair-minded decision makers, and that can only happen with these people here. They may not be elected, but they will provide consistency, and that's what is needed. As the report said, a sudden transition to a fully elected council poses significant risks. It could jeopardise the hard-earned momentum in advancing critical projects. What will you say to that?
Well, that was the pretty well a summary of Martin Jenkins' report that the commissioners commissioned to say why they should stay in power.
But isn't that the truth, though? Why is that wrong?
That could be argued about any possible city and maybe even government itself. Yes. And that's a classic argument for various countries around the world, which we're glad we're not part of. I mean, democracy should be sacrosanct. And I don't think you can say people get it right or get it wrong.
No, the fact was Tauranga was a failing city in the way that others weren't, and intervention was needed. You've got a whole smorgasbord of issues. You've got a struggling CBD, soaring rates, gridlock traffic. These people, they may not be elected, but they're doing a great job, Greg.
I don't think many people actually think that, and they can see with their own eyes there have not been the improvements to the traffic or to the soaring rates. In fact, some would say they're responsible for the soaring rates. Oh, there's very little to see for it.
Silly.
But I do have an actual scientific poll that the council itself did, and it seemed to be buried in a way in a committee meeting that was reported on about a month ago, and it shows that the overall reputation of Tauranga Council has dipped to 21% overall satisfaction. So that's under the leadership of the commissioners. And that's their own poll. It's not my poll. So we actually do know how the people feel.
If you are in the good seat of Tauranga and you listen to this now, you might be chopping your eggplant and frying it and listening to the panel on the radio. What do you think on this? 2101. Quick response on this, Sally.
Oh, I just think it's ridiculous that wasting money to investigate this and look at other options, and sure, the commissioners need to go, but this is the way New Zealand is run. We have democratic elections, and sure, some local elections, the people who are elected may be inexperienced, but they've got to start somewhere, and they could have some sort of mentorship and mentorship and advice. So I think we need to carry on doing what we're doing, and no Tauranga.
Greg, nice to have you here. Kia ora, appreciate your time this evening.
Thank you.
Former Mayor of Tauranga, Greg Brownless there.
This does speak to the argument about a 3-year term and a 4-year term. I think there's a big problem. Democracy, it should be sacrosanct, I agree. But actually the cycles of it do make it quite difficult, in this country, quite difficult sometimes to really know whether or not you are making progress effectively.
$1,800 a day.
That's a lot of money.
Chairman Anne Tolley, she's been paid that. And is that a lot or not?
Well, it's a reasonable amount if you add it all up. Lots of people are being paid that kind of money doing those kinds of jobs.
I better change my job,
all right,
Michael.
Let's move on to this. What do you think? Anyway, 12 away from 7, the panel. Well, the rumour mill has been in overdrive today. Drama with Taylor Swift's album leaked early, but now it's officially out.
Little did you know your home's really only a town you're just a guest in. So you work your life away just to pay for a timeshare.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. The tortured poets department listing parties have been happening up and down the country since Fort Worth is River from Real Groovy. Kia ora, nice to have you here.
Kia ora, nice to be here.
How has it gone down?
It's been crazy. We've had probably a couple hundred people through. It's been incredible listening to the new album for the first time.
Some have compared This River to Beatlemania, And you and I are probably too young to know that.
Oh, good Lord, Wallace. Please.
My panel says a hard no, River, a hard no on that. But but
there's, River might be.
Is there something about Taylor Swift that has really got people's excitement up compared to any other artist?
I think it's really just like her kind of like longevity in the industry. I mean, like me personally, I've been a major Swiftie since I was like 6 years old. I kind of have grown up with her my whole life. And I know a lot of others feel the same way. And it just kind of creates a real kind of community of people. It's really cool.
Oh, I'm so excited about the buzz. All right. So we'll leave Michael aside with his Jethro Tull and Procol Harum. Sally.
So how's this new album sounding to you? How does it compare to her earlier ones?
I think it's great. I'm really enjoying it. I'm excited to sit down, give it a proper listen, have a look at the lyrics and everything. But, I mean, I feel like every Taylor album has a different style, a different vibe, a different theme. I think this one's definitely a bit more mature than her previous albums. Some more kind of mature topics covered. But it's great. It's poppy, synthy, fun, dramatic. Very Taylor.
I'm just excited. I'm so excited, sort of talking to you because I can get that sort of enthusiasm from you. But Michael, I mean, does this echo something of your era?
Thank you for just continuing to rub that in. It is. It's not about Taylor. To be honest, I think it's fantastic. What excites me about this is that actually, in this world of isolated social media, people sitting at home playing games, doing things, this is a really good example of where this business and this music has brought people together and they get to enjoy it together. It's like a concert, except Taylor's not here just at the moment. But I think that's the beautiful thing. I think that's the thing about the thing that just reinforces for me, actually, we're social animals. We like to be together. We like to experience a new album from our favourite musician together in a way which reinforces what we love and gives us a chance to talk about it and all those sorts of things. Taylor Swift to one side, I think it's fantastic.
Did you get that, River? Because that's such a good point, hey? The listening party is back.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's been incredible just to see so many people coming through, people of all ages. And, it's just nice. There's a real community. We have, like, friendship bracelet-making tables, so people getting to meet each other, making new friends. I think there's definitely going to be a lot of new friendships formed from tonight. I think it's super cute.
I must Google afterwards and find out who Taylor Swift is.
Just who is she? We'll have an explainer from your River another day, but that's not for right now. Hey, lovely to have you here, and all the best. Well done. That's from the hype. Actually, probably one of the big stories today because she is such a phenomenon. Real groovy. And a lot of response regarding Tauranga. A hybrid approach is central. The commissioners have been excellent. We don't want to go backwards and lose the excellent progress they've made. Democracy sadly failed us here, says Kate. That's Kate's view in Tauranga. Keep that coming too. We might come back to that next week. Just briefly before I go, before we went on, such a response to the album that first blew us away. Another one here. Mickey in Aukato says, Street Legal by Bob Dylan was my blown away album. It just on first listen, it was actually at Everyman's Records, and I remember putting on Woodstock and hearing the Star Spangled Banner by Jimi Hendrix, and my mouth was open, and the attendant at the counter asked me if I was okay. I had never heard music like it before.
It is a pretty stunning piece.
The sound of the guitar, the fall of those bombs on Vietnam that it was echoing is, it's just like, what is this? It was amazing.
I find it quite hard. I never can think of the answer to what's your best album of ever, what blew your mind away. And albums can be so inconsistent, can't they? Because, there can be three quarters of it you love and then another part that you don't. It always felt to me like it's songs that, and I hadn't thought of the Jimi Hendrix song, but that, the Star Spangled Banner, but that's one of those things where you just go, my God, in the moment.
Oh, totally. Another
but
one here.
But whether it's always albums, I'm never...
Right.
Whereas people do say it should be.
Dion says, the album that blew my mind on first listen was, needless to say, Dark Side of the Moon by Pink Floyd. And actually, me too, when I first heard that, I was, whoa-wee, what is this? Mm. What planet am I on? Mm. You know? Anyway, it's six away from seven. The panel, Sally Wenley, Michael Moynihan, finally. So I was on the radio earlier in the week and Jesse Mulligan gets up and just keeps talking. As I keep talking, he says, look, I'm just going to add to my steps, as he proceeds to shuffle around while putting a few steps onto his 10,000 step goal, which got me thinking, this is a huge global phenomenon, but do we need to do steps? It's become quite the trend in the last few years. With us, Richard Betty, Chief Executive of Exercise NZ, who's just come back from a global conference on just this topic, exercise. Kia ora, Richard.
Kia ora, Wallace.
I guess I should ask you first, Richard, as an exercise expert and practitioner, do you do steps?
So I do measure my activity. I don't actually measure my steps. The only time I might do that is when I'm, funny enough, when I'm away and I may not be working out, but I'll, for example, walk, and I might walk 15 or 20 kilometres in a day simply because when I'm in a foreign city, I'll do that a lot more than I would at home. But my regular activity, I will measure my activity rather than steps. But that's not to say you shouldn't ever. So I think the key principle here is any movement is better than no movement. So right. If someone's measuring something, we'll call it steps, there's some pretty good evidence that people that have a higher step count have a longer life expectancy. Now, really important with all of that research, there's some pretty good meta-analysis of it. It's correlated, not causal. So it may not be that that's the thing that's causing it, but we do know that people that do have more steps also do live longer. But steps is not enough. So if you're starting and doing nothing, then steps is a great metric. The problem with steps, though, there's no intensity, and it's missing the other component of movement, which is a degree of what we call it muscle loading. So the WHO has two guidelines. One is around how much activity you do, and the other one is the type of activity. So it specifically talks about strength. They call it strength training. So, you know, it's anything that loads the muscles in the bones.
It's interesting, Richard. Well, because I saw Jesse shuffling, I thought, is that exercise?
Does that count?
Yeah, it doesn't count. But Sally Wenley, steps for you?
No, jeepers, I haven't taken a step since I was 16, and I'm now in my 50s because I'm a paraplegic, and I'm still alive, not quite kicking. So I'm a wee bit sceptical about all of these steps, but I respect people that do it.
I always think that I can't help but think of that joke that says, you know, it's not that they live longer, it's just that it seems like they live longer if they're stepping along. I'm always a bit sceptical, I have to say, Richard, about sort of fads of this sort. I think all of the things you've discussed, which is that it's important that we take exercise rather than not take exercise. I really think that it's important that we engage in the world and arouse in it and all of those sorts of things rather than not do all of those sorts of things. I guess it's just that you've got to, the public finds it easier if they can respond to something and count something. The bit right. that I don't like is where people give up because they haven't reached 10,000 steps.
Yes.
And so they sort of think, well, I can't do it, I'm a failure, and
very
then they
point.
Go back to doing nothing.
Richard?
That's a really good point, actually, because there is the 10,000 steps is an entirely made-up number. Yeah. That's one thing. So 10,000, why? Because it's a nice round number. So there is nothing magical
24.
About 10,000. Yeah, exactly. So if you do 8,000 steps in a day, I'm going to say it might be good, because if you normally do 20, that's actually probably bad. But if you normally do very little and you're now doing 3,000, that's good too. So rather than having a one metric as the answer, more is better than less for the vast majority of people. There's a few people that might be overexercising, but we'll put them to the side. For the most people, certainly 95% of people in New Zealand need to do more activity.
95?
Well, 50% of people don't meet the WHO guidelines at all, but most people still need to do more, because more will give you better, not just length of life, but quality of life. Because these days we don't want to live a long life, we want to live a productive and enjoyable life, which is not just about longevity of life.
You stay quite fit, don't you, Sally? You go kayaking and, you know, all that sort of stuff.
Fishing and swimming.
Yeah.
And
well, there you
yeah,
go.
Yeah, yeah. Mm.
So you do
but,
just,
I mean,
you don't
have to step. I respect that it's about keeping active. Mm. And as you yeah. said, yeah. Michael, you know, if you don't use what you've got, you know, you could lose it. Mm. Makes me think of that fine young Cannibal song. If I could walk 500 miles, if I could walk
But hang on, isn't it the Proclaimers?
Anyway.
Yeah.
Oh, I was wrong.
I think it's the Proclaimers. Yeah.
How bad is that?
That's quite bad.
Friday-itis.
But it could be cannibals, you know, could easily be.
On that shocking night, Richard, it's always good to have you on the panel. I really appreciate your common sense. That's Richard Betty there, Chief Executive of Exercise NZ. I'll send you a Fine Young Cannibals album, Sally, to do your homework on.
Yes, please.
And
I apologise.
For the panel. Stay with me. I'm with you till 8. Stick around.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.